Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Want to suggest a State of the Union address for help for President Obama? Want to help others do that? We are inviting you to collaborate with other Brian Lehrer Show listeners to write a draft State of the Union address on our website. Now, this is an online collaboration, not a debate, not a traditional comments board, and it's going on all day today, right now, and up until State of the Union time at 9 o'clock tonight. We'll talk about it on the show tomorrow, see what you've come up with. Anybody can take part. Go to WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehrer Show to help write a group draft of a State of the Union address. We have 22 versions of the State of the Union address so far from different listeners, and the job now is to try to merge them as a group into a small number of drafts. So if you want to do that kind of online collaboration, go to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. By the way, one more thing about HousingWorks. We have a link on our page to their Help Haiti site on the HousingWorks website. So you can go to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show to get to that. Now, as we've been discussing, President Obama is expected to address health reform in tonight's State of the Union address. We'll see how much he is willing to fight to save that effort. And it's unclear what the election of Scott Brown in Massachusetts will do for the long-term prospects of the bill. But long-term health is still a critical and sometimes overlooked piece of the overall puzzle. At both the national and local level, reform efforts are underway to change the rules around elderly care in nursing facilities, hospitals, and most importantly, at home. So joining us to discuss what's being done and what to look for in the details of the health care bills in Washington and in Albany are two members of the organization FREA, which provides resources and advocacy on long-term care issues. Betty Weimersheimer is executive director, and Carlin Baugh is FREA's policy advocate. So Betty and Carlin, welcome to WNYC.
Oh, thank you very much. We're very happy to be here today to discuss the long-term care provisions and national health care reform.
And do we have both of you?
Yes, I'm here as well. Thank you.
Good. So before we get to some of the legislation moving through Albany, and it may fall to Albany if this all crashes in D.C., let's just talk briefly about long-term care at the national level. As the Senate bill stands right now, what's in it? What would change for long-term care? What would be better?
Well, first of all, there's a number of provisions, one of which is the Nursing Home Transparency and Improvement Act, which would provide public disclosure of ownership of nursing homes. Corporate structures are often so complicated that it may be difficult to determine who actually owns nursing homes, and that creates barriers for tracking down who is responsible for deficiencies in care. And that particular act will also improve processes for collecting information on staffing, complaints, and nursing home compare data. Nursing Home Compare is a federal website that provides data on nursing homes around the nation, allowing consumers who are looking for nursing homes to determine the quality of care being provided. This act would also improve complaint procedures and creating a standardized complaint form and new internal quality improvement procedures, as well as training in dementia care for nursing assistants. Both bills authorize national background checks for all long-term care workers who have access to residents or patients, both in home care and nursing homes. And now Carlin can talk about some of the community long-term care provisions in the Senate bill.
Yeah, I think the Senate bill is particularly exciting for these provisions. As you noted, there is a desire for people to age in place and stay in the community. And the Senate bill really addresses these more so than the House bill does. It's important to understand that a big chunk of our long-term care spending comes from Medicaid dollars. So in 2007, we spent about $190 billion on long-term care services, and 40% of that came from Medicaid. Of those Medicaid dollars, 70% of that goes towards institutional care. So there's a real institutional bias. And Senate version of the bill provides a lot of provisions to allow states to accommodate more people in the community to age in place by rebalancing the Medicaid spending towards community services without adding restrictions for people to be eligible for Medicaid. So there are incentives for states to increase their home and community-based service spending to receive enhanced federal dollars for their Medicaid match. There are provisions to expand services to individuals who would otherwise be in the nursing home, but under these provisions can now age in place in the community through waiver programs that would allow them to get assistance with their activities of daily living and other services such as transportation or potentially assistive devices within their home.
And it's really sad and kind of outrageous that the incentives in the current Medicare and Medicaid systems are for people to go into nursing homes, because that's
yes.
what's reimbursed. Staying in your home and getting those support services that you were just listing are not as well covered.
Exactly. And it's a big challenge. You know, there's an affordability challenge, and there's also an accessibility challenge. Even if this provides more dollars for people to be able to pay for their services, sometimes the services aren't in place, especially here in New York in more rural parts of the state.
Let's move to the local level and the Family Healthcare Decisions Act, as it's called, which just passed the New York State Assembly and is moving to the Senate. What's the bill and what would that one do?
This is a very exciting bill, which would be a huge victory for all New Yorkers. In New York, we do not have next of kin laws. So in 48 other states, there are some sort of provision or law to allow your loved one to make a health care decision for you if you become incapacitated. In New York, we don't have that right unless we fill out a document called a health care proxy. And the number of New Yorkers who have a health care proxy is really pretty dismally low. So this bill would say that if you become incapacitated, your loved ones can make decisions for you. And there's a hierarchy. So it would go down through a guardian or a proxy, a spouse or a domestic partner, which is language we were all fighting to have in the bill, right down the line to even a friend for those of us who don't have family members. And this way, if you go into a healthcare facility, for example, into a nursing home, and you become incapacitated, your loved ones can make those decisions instead of the nursing home being in charge of those healthcare decisions. And it's everything from end-of-life issues to your day-to-day decisions to ask for a second medical opinion or to refuse a painful treatment.
And listeners, we do want some questions or stories about long-term care to help put some humanity on these bones. Have you had to make a decision with or for a family member about long-term care and whether to enter a facility or try at-home care? And how much did cost play into that decision? And how did you weigh that with the other factors? Are there things, either at the state level or the federal level, that policy could change, even looking back, if you had certain kinds of Medicare, Medicaid provisions that are in the federal health reform bill? Would something have been different for one of your loved ones? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or anyone who's run up against the limitations in New York state law that Carlin was just talking about. New York is one of only two states, Carlin, right, that doesn't have this kind
Correct.
Of legislation?
Correct.
So 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Why is that, by the way? Why do you think there are political barricades here that there aren't in 48 other states?
Well, that's a good question. We've been fighting for this bill for about 17 years, and a lot of the struggles that have occurred have been through language around the rights of a pregnant woman and what decisions should be made when a woman is pregnant as opposed to the rights of the fetus. And there's been a lot of opposition also to the domestic partner language. I'm not sure why that same opposition hasn't been faced as much in other states, but we've seen a really strong presence here of that those opposition groups.
Let's take a phone call. Here's Kathy in the West Village. Kathy, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hello. Good morning. I'm calling to ask if the Lombardi program is still in existence. It used to be, it was established by state legislature many, many years ago, and it provided services in the home for people who needed them up until the point where it cost so much it was more efficient to put them in the nursing home. Is that still going on?
Betty, do you know?
Yes, it is still going on. I think Carlin knows a little bit more about it than I do, because she answers also questions on our helpline.
Carlin, go ahead.
It's still in existence, and you are correct. It covers 75 for people in the community who need services that are up to 75% of nursing home costs. Those people can remain in the community and get services there. It's really essentially a nursing home without walls. It's for skilled nursing services in the community.
Liz in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Liz.
Hi, I think your panelists may have already answered part of my question. I am a professional person, actively working, 65 years of age, and I've been diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis. I was denied admittance to open enrollment under my husband's insurance policy to long-term care because of my condition, even though it really has a minimal effect on my life. I'm very active, go to the gym, et cetera, et cetera. I haven't really pursued it to find out if there are any alternatives. I'm wondering if there would be any alternatives under the state plan that would save me from the pre-existing condition that everyone is in such dread of.
Uh-huh. Or if the federal bill goes through, which
exactly.
would ban denial of health insurance for pre-existing conditions, would that also cover long-term care? Do either of you know?
Well, excuse me, there is something called the CLASS Act, the Community Living Assistance Service and Supports Act of 2009, which would create a long-term care, voluntary long-term care insurance program through which enrollees who become disabled after paying in for at least 5 years could purchase community-based long-term care services or support.
Without regard to pre-existing conditions?
Correct.
And that's part of the Senate bill, isn't it?
Yes, it is. But yeah. There's a lot of opposition from the insurance industry,
right.
long-term
and
care insurance industry.
And in fact, opponents argue that people in just Liz's case, I guess, although arthritis may not be the condition that they have in mind, but they think it creates a moral hazard where only the only people who will take advantage of these voluntary deductions to buy the insurance are the folks who are most likely to need the sort of expensive long-term care that's covered in the long run. So maybe people with early Alzheimer's or a heart condition or whatever it might be. And because it has benefits for at-home care, which can be very expensive, it would be a big drain on everyone else. What's your response to that concern?
That's a really valid concern, Brian, and it's certainly something we've considered in our support of the bill. The sustainability is in question by a lot of people, not just in terms of the risk pool and if it will only be sicker people buying in, but in terms of how that five-year buildup will work. A lot of younger people are saying that it's really not affordable for them to pay a premium higher than $65 a month. And estimates of the premium where you'd have to pay in every month for these 5 years range from $30 to over $200. The Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services feel the program may only be sustainable for 15 years, while the Congressional Budget Office feels it could be sustainable for 75 years. But it does vary by all of these factors.
My guests for just another few minutes are Carlin Baugh and Betty Weimersheimer from the group FREA, which provides resources and advocacy on long-term care issues. And as you've been hearing, long-term care very much in the forefront, both in the Senate health bill, stalled as it is, and also in Albany right now. Kara in Sunnyside, you're on WNYC. Hello, Kara.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call. My mother has Alzheimer's disease, and we discovered that for a period of time, assisted living was the perfect option for her. And what we learned is that Medicare would have been willing to pick up the full tab in a nursing home for $15,000 a month, but they would not pick up the tab for assisted living at half that price. In other words, we would have had to liquidate all her assets. She wasn't sick enough at that point for nursing home care. And I think that's crazy.
Betty or Carlin, what can Kara do?
Well, let me try to clarify something in a quick manner. Most assisted livings in New York State are private pay. There's a very, very small percentage that can be covered by Medicaid. In the nursing home, Medicare pays for short stays in rehab, but if you're going to be a long-term care resident, that's paid for by Medicaid.
Right.
Yeah, and this is one of the sort of intractable problems that we're up against that perhaps needs a legislative solution, particularly for people with Alzheimer's or dementia. These are people who maybe don't have a lot of skilled nursing needs but need help with their activities of daily living, and there's not really one perfect environment for people in that condition to go to. Provisions like the CLASS Act or more community services may be helpful because you could hire those caregivers you need so that you can continue to go to work and get some assistance with their activities of daily living.
Yes.
I would suggest if you have a moment later today to call our free helpline here at FREA, and we can get into more detail about the specific conditions of your loved one and where geographically you would like them to be able to live. Our helpline's free, and we can give this type of advice to people about what your best options may be.
And we're just about out of time, so why don't you give your helpline, and I can tell from our comments, from our comments page, but also our very, very full call board, that so many people have these situations in their lives that you may get a lot of calls on your helpline now that people who know that you're out there. But these, of course, are such important issues to deal with, and so it's good that FREA is there.
Right, absolutely, and we would certainly welcome those calls. Our helpline number is 212-732-4455.
Again?
212-732-4455.
And
we're open 10 to 5 Monday through Friday.
And it's bilingual, right?
Bilingual, Spanish and English.
Which happens to set up our next segment, because we're going to talk to the actor Tony Plana from Ugly Betty about playing a Latino character on an English language television sitcom, and other questions about Latinos in television in America. So that's coming up in just a minute. I want to thank Betty Weimersheimer, Executive Director, and Carlin Baugh, Policy Advocate from FREA, which provides resources and advocacy on long-term care issues. Thank you both.
Thank you so much.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.